हरिः
सहन भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावहितमस्तु अविद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
So now the opposition has made the point that Brahman can't be the cause, right? Because it's different from the material world, right? Because by the principle of the cause and the effect, that you can see the cause in the effect, therefore then, since Brahman is so different from the material world's temporary, that's eternal, that's full of bliss, it's full of misery, like this, so there can't be any connection between the two. Right? Therefore, then, Pradhan has to be the cause of the material world. Right? Because they're only looking at certain aspects. They're not actually looking at the complete picture. Right? Because being not theistic, then they're not going to actually understand how from the person is coming everything. And so all these contradictions are reconciled in the person, right? Because that can't be understood by logic. It's only understood by devotion where the Lord reveals himself. See, that's the problem is that the materialists are depending upon their material intelligence. And the problem is bhakti is not dependent upon that. And the Lord's not, because he's the supreme, intelligence comes from him also. So why intelligence? Why not that I've got more earth than everybody, you know, like that. I weigh 500 kilos, so I should understand everything, right? So the, you know, those from, what is it? What's that place called?
Samoa,
yeah. Means, you know, they're the most intelligent people on the planet, because they have the most earth. You know, or someone else, their body retains water, so therefore I'm the best. Or you understand, or someone else's, they're so passionate, there's so much fire. You know, does that make sense? So why is it that one in that one thing, that material ingredient is the one that does? So you can reason, you can analyze with that, but you can only reason and analyze within the area that it's designed, like a thermometer. Can I tell what the air pressure is? Can I tell how fast you're going in your car? No. So therefore, we would say is that it's not intelligent to think that something that's specifically designed for one thing can do another thing. You know, and demand that that's what it is. Because I have a thermometer, I know everything. I'm the all-knowing, all-seeing, you know, person with the thermometer. Does that make sense? So that's the problem is the intellectuals within the material world. Then they think because they have intelligence, they can understand what's beyond intelligence. It's material nature intelligence, so it can't actually perceive what's outside of its area of perception. Just like the thermometer can only understand heat. A barometer, you know, the air pressure. A speedometer, the speed. Does that make sense? You know, so that's all that they can tell. They can't tell something else. But because they don't have anything else, and they think that that is everything, right? Because within the material, then it's basically the top, except for who has the bigger ego amongst that. So who's the smartest and with the biggest ego, then they're the best. But if you have a bigger ego and the other one doesn't, even though he's intelligent, you can still win. Because ego is then the top. Right? So But the point is if we're thinking of cultured and you know, reasonable, then we'll include the intelligence. So then they'll think that because of that, I can understand everything, which they can't. So this is all materialists. But especially those who identify as, you know, scholarly or intellectual, they'll have the problem the most. Does that make sense? So that's any sphere. It doesn't matter if it's Vedic or non-Vedic. Point is that if we apply this to the Vedic, it already includes the non-Vedic. Does that make sense? So it's just, you know, like Prabhupada said, if you have 100 rupees, it includes all the other smaller denominations within it. So in the same way, the Vedic, the scholarship that's there and the depth that they take the philosophy, if they're wrong, then anybody else based on these kind of principles are always wrong. So that's why we can say that there's karmis and jnanis. And then we can, you know, then discuss about the weakness of an intellectual. You know, it's just a matter of what's their piety or not, or what's their source of knowledge or not. But the point is, the same fault will be there, is that the material cannot understand the spiritual. Is that what I'm saying? So, now here, they're trying to understand by that law reasoning, because you have to use something as a measurement. Right? Does that make sense? Because for us to relate to anything, you have to use measurement, right? Because Maya is there. Now, what Maya you use, what aspect of Maya, then that makes the distinction. So Krishna is all these potencies, so he being everything. Therefore, then, he can relate to everybody. So depending upon which aspect of Maya you take to measure, you know, from your perception, Krishna will reciprocate on that. Right? So that's not a problem for him. So in their Maya, their measurement, right, which was, I think the Sanskrit is miyate, like that. So that means their measurement is, that means there has to be the similar qualities, so I don't see those exact similar, I see contradictory qualities. Right? Because they're only looking at Brahman. They're not looking at the energy of Brahman. Because they're taking Brahman has no energy. So then, since what we're going to see in the material world being energy, the transformations here we see, you know, within Pradhan to some degree. But it's better than what they see in Brahman. So then they'll conclude that therefore the material worlds come from Pradhan. So basically all these philosophies will come up with that. Any philosophy that's not Vaishnav will come up with that. Whether they take it back to Pradhan or not, like the modern scientists, they're already dealing with Mahatattva. Just all the elements are there and stuff like that, and then somehow or another life comes from that. You know, that's their idea, you know. So that's the difficulty, is that except for the Vaishnav philosophy, you know, which means that you accept the supremacy of the Supreme Person and that everything's coming from them. So those who accept from this platform, then they'll agree with this. The problem is except for the Vedic, nothing is scientific enough to establish it. As we can see in the modern, those who have faith that God created the world, the problem is science can show that, well, what about this, what about that? They don't have answers, so then they get bewildered. So some will maintain the faith, even though they don't know, right? If you have a nicely situated neophyte, they'll have faith, even though they don't understand what's going on, like that, but they may maintain, but that's more rare. Generally speaking, the neophyte, if someone proves them wrong, they get bewildered. Right? So then they may shift their faith into something else. Does that make sense? So like that, then it goes on. So all materials means anything other than accepting the supremacy of the Supreme Person is going to be based on that life comes from matter. That's just the way it is. Now, how that is, what exactly that looks like, that will be the difference between the different philosophies. Right? Does that make sense? You know, what is the soul? What is God? These are going to be the differences between all the different religions and philosophies. Mm-hmm. So it's only we see in the Vedic tradition from the scriptures, then we can get a clear picture. Right? But that's only given by the Vaishnavs. And then of them you see Achinta Beta Beta Tattva, that gives the clearest picture. It can accommodate all aspects. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Just like we can accommodate that there are individuals who see that Narayan's first and from him comes Krishna in his pastimes. So we can understand that because they're looking at it from the principle called Aishwarya or opulence or majesty. So in that principle, then they can only accommodate Krishna as an aspect of the majesty of the Lord, because they can't break the majesty principle. That's their vision, that's their taste. So because of the jnana shakti, that's how they see. Does that make sense? So like that, then we can see is by rasa, that's what they have to do. But in fact, then no, Krishna's first. Because the aspect of sweetness is actually the greater, the more intense, the fuller aspect. And then this it becomes formalized because there's that aspect. You do have the Kriya and Jnana Shakti. So when they become more prominent rather than the Hladini, then you bring in the aspect of majesty. Right? It's the greatness of the Lord. It's because of the secondary aspects of the power and the greatness and the position. Does that make sense? So that's the Jnana and Kriyas. They become more prominent. So therefore, majesty comes up. Well, for Braj, yeah, you only get the sound. I can see the thing, so we get a little distraction while it's going by. In Braj, it's not because of his greatness or this or that. It's just because he as a person is so wonderful. That's it. So it's just that sweetness of the personal. And these others, they can add to the sweetness, but they won't distract from the sweetness. So they either don't care, or it'll just add to the sweetness. But it'll never distract from that. What we see in Dwarka, which is a mix between the two, the majesty can distract from the sweetness. And then while in Vaikuntha, then the sweetness is subservient to majesty. It's not that there's not some element of sweetness, it's because of the majesty, that's why it's so sweet. Does that make sense? So that's the difference in the perspective. So we can accommodate that. Others can't. So that's the point of a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. It can accommodate everything. That's the point. Braja Bhakti can accommodate all the others. It's not a problem. Because it's the origin of them. So, yeah. Yes?
In that case, is it possible for a person who is like in a... can say in Dwarka or Vaikuntha mood,
right.
To change and to go to the...
To change, but it's not important that they change because they have a taste there. And once that taste is there, there's no need. If they're not on the platform of prema, and they may have an inherent quality by association, then they could change that. But once you come to prema, there's no need. Because if that was the case... then how is anything going to be stable? What happens tomorrow? Mother Jashoda wakes up and decides she wants to be, a cowherd boy. So once you come to the platform of prema, you'll only see from that point. So there's no need because all these aspects are needed. Right? Because if you're going to have a pastime, if everybody is just, gopis in Radharani's group, now what happens? You know what I'm saying? What do they do all day? What do they, it loses its wonderfulness. It means it'll be special because it's Krishna and the devotees, but it won't have the flavor of Braj. Because where are the cows? Where's Nanda? Where's the whole community? Where's all, it's not there. So all these things are there because they're in Krishna. And if it's in Krishna, it means it's in his energy. And so as the energy expands, that's... Naturally, all those things go along with it.
Can you say that we have
an alternative meaning of Yiddish cup? It means they dropped it.
Not the plastic one.
Yes.
Can you say that every living entity has a special relationship with Krishna and his individual nature?
Yes. Means that otherwise, what's the meaning of that aspect? So the point is that Radharani is the Sarup Shakti from the aspect of Ladini, of Krishna's pleasure, because that's the whole point of expanding rasa is for that pleasure. So the highest pleasure is going to be coming from the Icha Shakti. That's where pleasure is found. But it's not that being the total energy that they don't take care of the Jnana and Kriya aspects, but that's done by Yoga Maya. Right, she takes care of all that aspect. So Radharani just manifests the Hladini aspect because the work, just like Krishna, is just Icha, and then Balaram takes care of Jnana and Kriya.
Yes.
So the same way Radharani is the Hladini, and the Yogamaya takes care of the Samvit and Sandini because they're the servant Shaktis of the primary aspect of.
Regarding the Shakti, sometimes we say that Kriya and Jnana can be divided among Bhu and Nila. You didn't say that?
Yeah, but I'm just...
There was a discussion that we try to place the Shaktis more or less.
Yes, like, no, I'm saying if you're looking at it as Shri Bhu and Nila, then Shri will be Hladini, Bhu will be Sandini, and Nila will be Sandini. I mean, some bit of Sandini. Right? So that will be there. It's just, it'll have different flavors, just like we saw Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about, that you have the Vibhav, the Prabhav, and the Anubhav. Right? So you're talking about the same Sarup Shakti, but when you're talking about Vibhava, means the aspect of shelter, of rasa, then you have internal, external, and the jiva. Because these are the ones that are the shelter of their relationship with Krishna, right? And then when you're talking about influence, then that's going to be the Icha, Kriya, and Jnana. Because that's the reason things are going on, right? Because influence means you're making things happen. Right, and then the Anubhava, where the taste will be, that will be in Samvit, Sandini, and Hladini. Does that make sense? So, like that, then when you have the forms and these aspects of majesty, then you're going to have Shri Bhu and Nila. So Vishnu is going to have them. Then they have their expansions because there's all the Lakshmis and that are there. But they're the core. So as Lakshmi is the main, then she has the left and right. And then from there you get eight.
Anubhava is the taste?
No, influence.
No, Prabhava's influence.
Prabhava's influence.
Influence, yeah. And Anubhava will be where the taste is. You know, the results of that. Does that make sense? So you have, because if you're having that everything goes back to here, that's why we're saying there's no, Krishna reconciles all contradictions because everything has to go back to there. Because we may say, oh, but there's contradictions here. That's the whole point. Is that all things come out of the one energy. And then from there it just keeps expanding.
So, it'll take another few years.
Yeah, but at least it means this is, you know, you're able to catch this one, right? Yeah, so this is that's the whole point, is by regularly hearing and discussing, we slowly, like, you know, water on a stone, you know, drop by drop, it wears away, you know, like that. Yeah, but the point is if it's consistent, that's why Nityam Bhagavata Seva, if it's consistent, then we see that's where it works. But if it's occasional, then it doesn't work so well.
What do we do after 4 years?
Then you go through it again.
Maharaj, so Prabhupada is assisting Anubhava?
No, It's just Prabhav is a different aspect in that Prabhav is the influence, why things are going on like that. But just to say it's just assisting, then you're just looking at a hierarchical thing like that. But the point is if we have Radharani and Purnamasi, who's the senior in the pastime? Yeah. Who's senior, Krishna or Balaram? And who's senior, Krishna, Balaram, or Sandipani Muni? Yeah, so you have Lord Chaitanya as the supreme, then his expansion is Nityananda, then his expansion is Advaita, but Advaita is the senior of them. So that's what we're saying, is if you just try to put it into one box, it won't work.
When you made the statement of one Shakti assisting another, so I was just having a confusion.
That's there, but you have to see it not just as hierarchical, otherwise then you won't catch it. Because Radharani is Ladini, everything is supporting that. But the whole point is when the pastime unfolds, she's not the senior person.
Okay. And even we see that in the temples we have Vishnu and Guru and Shri, which have been worshipped along with Vishnu. But we never find Neela.
It depends on the picture. You see her sometimes. You haven't ever seen. It means you have Lakshmi there, you have Boo there, and then you have someone who's generally quite dark, like Jamuna colored, like that. And she's sitting down there, you know, at the bottom. It means you have Ananta there, Lakshmi's there, Boo's there, but then she'll be sitting down at the bottom. So you generally see them only in these, I think, Tanjuar paintings, like that. Yeah, but she's very dark. She's because she's like Jamuna, like Krishna. She's the same color like Krishna. All the other two will be, you know, be a golden color like Lakshmi, like that. But you don't see her very often in pictures. But she's also known as Leela. She arranges the pastimes, like that. So all this is going on. So the point is here. But if you look in some of the old paintings, you can see her. Okay, so then we were getting to the point of, yes, so all these energies expand. And then expanding, why would they expand unless it's going to be for interaction and for the particular flavor that's there? Right? Otherwise, why expand? And so then in that expansion, that means they're going to be a part of who they've expanded from. Right? Because Advaita Acharya doesn't manifest all the aspects of Nityananda Prabhu, otherwise then you just have two Nityananda Prabhus. You know, Nit and Ananda. Like that, you know. Who's that? Huh?
Aussies.
Yeah, like the Aussies. And so... So that means is that they're apart. Just like when Krishna expands, it gets the what's the term used? I can't remember. Swamsa. It means it's manifesting less than who they've come from. Because otherwise, that's already included. But you want to be very specific. Does that make sense? You know, so you're sitting on the couch, so you expand the one that gets into the kitchen to get something to eat, right? But when you go into the kitchen to get something to eat and something's not there what you want, they expand to go to the store to get what's not there. Does that make sense? So like that, it's always something less than what is there before. It doesn't mean in the Vishnu Tattva that there is less. It's just they manifest less because of, but in Shaktis, then they have just that much. Does that make sense? So therefore, when the jiva being expanded, what's the point of expansion if it is already done by someone else? Does that make sense? So the jiva is doing something that's specifically unique. But that uniqueness is fitting into the the program of all the other things. Does that make sense? So that's why there's the specifics of what service one does. Because that's what's the unique aspect. It's not that other things aren't done. But it says that's the one that you add to the whole picture. And so there is a time when Krishna wants to taste that specific aspect. And so then that jiva takes care of that. You know what I'm saying? But the constant of what's always there in that field in which that's functioning, then we see is Radharani and her associates. And within that, then something can be done. They also are doing, because they already include that. But then there's a taste where they can be doing something else and you do that. Does that make sense? So then there's always a uniqueness to what each soul adds to what's going on.
Can this concept, the principle of the Swamisha from Krishna and to all the different expansions down the line, same applies even to the Shakti Tattva also?
Yes.
So they have the Swamishas and then it goes...
Yes, because otherwise it's what you see in Radharani, then you'll see less than her expansions. Yeah. Like that, so you only see it complete there. Then when the expansion's there, then when they expand into Dwarka, then they're manifesting a little less. Mm-hmm. And then from that into Vaikuntha, it gets less.
Mm-hmm.
Means you're talking about less in unlimited, so that's the whole point. But it's still, there's a flavor difference. That's why then the realms are there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So does this make sense? So this is then their doubt. Is that since they don't see directly certain qualities in Brahman that they see in the material world, then they'll say Brahman can't be the cause. Rather than it's a lack of the problem, because they don't accept that Brahman has qualities. Even though they describe it, it's against the qualities of Brahman. Brahman has no qualities. This is the fun part. Right? The Mayavada says Brahman has no qualities. But having no qualities is still a quality. That it's unlimited is a quality. It's all pervasive as a quality.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But so they'll only accept certain ones. But they won't accept that if there's unlimited. So that's the Lord Shakti. So as Brahman, he still has Shakti. It's just as he is impersonal, then the Shaktis are also impersonal. So impersonal here doesn't mean non-existent, it means generic. You know, like we say, strength. It's a generic quality. Now, when it's applied, let's say, in a pillar, now that's specific. Right? But when it's just the principle of strength, that's generic. Like Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong. Right? So that means it's generic. Because anything strong is there. It's specific enough that you can delineate the quality and where it's manifest. But the point is that anything that's strong, anything that has strength. You know, it's just like the strength in the spider web. That's Krishna. It's not something else. But then spider web, now that's specific. So within the specific, you can see the generic. So that's how you can appreciate how Krishna's in everything as Brahman. But it's Krishna who's expanding as Brahman. It's not Brahman stands on his own. Right? Krishna says, Brahmano hi pratishtaham, that he's the support of Brahman. Brahman doesn't stand on its own. Does that make sense? Yes. So, now... this is where their mistake is. They can't see this. Because, as we said, intelligence cannot understand transcendence. So unless you approach the Lord in devotion, he doesn't reveal. Otherwise, the maximum you can get with your intelligence is the unlimited aspect of Brahman. It's eternal, unlimited aspect. That's as far as the intelligence can grasp. And that's only because that's what Krishna allows. So beyond that has to be done with devotion. Without devotion, you cannot go beyond that point. So any philosophy who doesn't accept, you know, the Lord in his fullness, then will not be able to understand these truths. You know, they accept him as Paramatma, they can accept up to there. But then the problem is why is Paramatma doing that? Because then you're leaving out the Icha. Right? You're talking Jnana and Kriya, but what's the Icha? Why is it there? So only if you understand him as a person, then that aspect comes out. Otherwise, it doesn't. Does this make sense? Yeah? So, that's then what is the fault in all philosophies and religions if they're not accepting the supremacy of the original person. Like that. And that original person happens to be God and happens to be Brahman. But those are just the natural position of them, of himself. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So because then because the philosophies think that God is impersonal, therefore the Icha Shakti is for them and I am personal. So everything is.
Yes, yes. But then the point is they can't understand the Supreme in his position. Yes. Means that's how they make the mistake. So they include, it's not that their philosophy doesn't include the Icha Shakti, it's just that they're the Lord of the Icha Shakti. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in this is because it's missing these points they can't understand, but because they're simply trying to fulfill their desire, they don't actually care to fulfill. So that's why we may say, why can't they understand this? Because they don't want to understand that. They don't need to. As long as you're fulfilling your own desire, what do you care? Does that make sense? If your life is going on perfectly fine, is not changing at all, does it matter what's happening in the rest of the world, or this, the stock market crashed, or this or that? As long as your life doesn't change, do you really care? Right? So only if it affects you, then you care. Does that make sense? You're going to work, and you're frustrated because the street you always go down is closed for repairs. But everybody else in the office, it's not the street they go down is not. They couldn't care. They're, oh, well, it happens. You know, they'll be very philosophical. Yeah. And now if it happens to them, then now they'll, you know, you'll hear them talk a little different. Is that? Yeah. So that's the whole point. So it's, yeah, so people only see according to their subjective position. So only when you include Krishna, then you can actually say it's objective. Right? Because the intellectuals try to say is that, okay, I may not have a particular emotional thing when I'm perceiving, but it still doesn't mean that they're not subjective. They've just defined subjective as emotional, or the mind. But according to their philosophy, right, is if subjectivity is the mind, but the problem is that physicists don't accept really the mind. So then how can there be a problem of subjectivity? You know what I'm saying? So, you know, it's just all shoot yourself in the foot. You know, like that. But because it doesn't matter to them, they're getting done their work. They don't have to take their philosophy beyond what gets the work done. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if I'm getting my work done in a very simple way, I'd never become more sophisticated. But if that simple way doesn't always work, I have to keep changing. Then I have to use more intelligence and more sophistication. That makes sense? So therefore, we see amongst the materialists, then we have a hierarchy of sophistication of their philosophies. Right? With the material Vedanta being the highest. Right? There is a hierarchy. That's how they work. So each one is there, they take it farther. Mm-hmm. Right, so you have Nyaya, then Vaisheshika takes it farther. Mm-hmm. Right? But then whatever is in those two is already in Shankya, which has taken it farther. Right? But it in its own category, including the other two, then is improved upon by Yoga, by Patanjali, right? And so then those two go together. But they already include what's already in the lower ones. And then a karma, then that already includes what's in these others. Yeah. Right? And so then they have their complete, it's a karma, you know, Purvan Uttara. Yes. So they have they're in a group because they can defeat all these other ones. Okay. You understand? But Vedanta is the higher one. But then Vedanta is not seen in the devotional view. Then the problem comes is that it still not gives that completeness. So only when the Vaishnava perspective, then you can actually get the proper understanding. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Okay. Okay. Uttara. But there is in that pure omniscient Brahman, as the material cause, two very subtle shaktis, consisting of consciousness and matter, to make it similar to the effect, the material world. So now here's the point, is that they're not seeing that within that pure omniscient Brahman, there's these very subtle shaktis of consciousness and matter. Right? So that's why they can't understand this point in philosophy. Right? They can't grasp that the material world can come from Brahman because they don't know Brahman has shaktis. And like Brahman is very subtle and all-pervading, these shaktis are the same. Right? And the manifestation is the secondary, it's grosser, so you can appreciate it. But it's still happening because of these shaktis. Right? So Brahman is dealing with the internal potency, but the internal potency is then transforming as the external. And then you see the gross manifestation.
So it's more important to
Pratyaksha Anuman, not to Shabda. Pratyaksha. Yes, in these schools then is definitely, but they still, their Shabda is what their Acharyas have given, but their Acharyas are giving that by their own Pratyaksha and Anuman. But for those who are more properly, like you see with karma, then it has to be based in Shastra. That's where you get your smartest from, right? Because it's based in the scripture. It has to be there. But because of their materialistic interpretations of karma and jnana, they can't understand the subtler applications and meanings of the scriptures. Because they only take it as words that are saying some certain things. And then it gets the work done. You follow the ritual, you get the result. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that will be the problem. Purvapaksha. So then they'll come up with. By this argument, the problem is not removed, since the difference still exists. From the subtle material cause with subtle shaktis arises a gross effect. So if they're saying, okay, he has subtle shaktis, you know, even if we're going to say, we accept, not that they do, but they're just saying for argument's sake, if we accept that, okay, he has subtle shaktis, it still doesn't answer the problem because, how do you say?
The effect is gross.
Because the effect is gross. So therefore, we still can't accept this. Right? From the subtle material cause with subtle shaktis arises a gross effect. Other differences can also be seen. But then in that case, you can see a difference between the parent and the child, so then you can say, is the parent's not actually the cause of the child? You know, so like that, you can just keep going on and on and on, the farther you take. So they only want to take it enough to disprove others, prove theirs and disprove others. They won't take it beyond that. That's why much of the time, if you can take things beyond, it works. Like that. You show the steps past. Does that make sense? Then they start to see that there's some weakness in it, because then it doesn't make sense. They're saying, no, this is logical. What you're saying is not logical. But what they're saying is also not logical, because logic is simply a mechanical device. It works in a particular mechanical way. What is your purpose of this mechanical device? Then that defines what kind of result you'll get from using that device. It's not that logic itself stands on its own as a supreme authority, right? Because we see as Anuman, it's in the middle. It can do more than what the pratyaksha, but it's not up to the standard of shabda. It's a mechanical, and that's as far as it gets, right? So, therefore, if you're using these mechanics to prove whatever you want to prove, you'll only use the mechanics in a way that will get you to that. And once you get there, you stop using them. But if you keep going, it keeps, you know, like I, yeah, something, something. You know, it's like once I saw this drawing, you know, it's, you know, done by nerds with nothing better to do, right? So it must have been some anthropologists or something. So they're showing you have the steps that they take from, you know, the monkey, you know, whichever monkey they want to use, like that, and then they show the steps, you know, up to modern man. You know how the cheekbones change, the forehead changes, this, that changes, and all that. And they show this very, you know, mechanistic method that comes up to there. And they, everyone stops there, and everyone's happy. So these guys, because they have nothing better to do, right? And that they took the same mechanics that were there and kept applying it.
Okay.
And then they showed, this is what man's going to look like after another so much time. So, you know, we're taking this, you know, modern man is the pinnacle. They're just taking, no, he's just a step in the process. And what they came up with was really weird.
Yeah.
Huh? No, because you're going the opposite, you know, the cheekbones, everything, you know, that, you know, I think, you know, you end up more with those, what were those guys, you know, the huge tall heads and stuff like that. You know, you end up with all weird things. It's, you know, the forehead gets higher, so it just keeps getting more. And, you know, the nose gets, you know, because the nose is what do you call it? You know, down with the monkey, only the tip sticks out. You know, and then it comes up to here, so then you end up with this huge, like, beak, you know, like that. And, you know, all these huge forehead, it's just all, you know, it's just, it was, you know, they took it to absurdity, because they probably took it a little bit and started laughing and this and that, kept taking it more until it was just more than that people wouldn't be able to relate to. So it was enough to, you know, go into absurdity. So they were happy, right? You know, that's all it takes for a nerd, right? You take something to absurd and they're happy. So in the same way as you just take someone's philosophy and just continue in that, if they don't catch the right, you just show that. And so therefore, that's because that part that they're missing is not answered, because you need this. Now all these things can be answered because there's a person. Like that. We may not like the idea, you know, because we don't like the idea of a person, because people give us trouble. Right? In fact, we give ourselves trouble. So, you know, if we're not a person and there are no people, then, you know, supposedly life would be great. But the problem is then, you know, how do you perceive that life is great? You understand? So that's the difficulty. You remove all the things that give you trouble, there's no happiness either. Because the difficulty is all the things that you gain happiness from, those are the ones that give you trouble. Right, so why would that be there? Because if you remove both, then there's no trouble, but there's no happiness either. Yes, but then why do they say Brahmananda? Because it can't be Ananda, because there's nothing. Because what we see is what they're dealing with is actually Buddhism, which is just void, there's nothing. So it's not they're saying that Brahman, because if it's all Brahman, then here, this is all Brahman, so then you could be on that liberated platform here, and everything here is real, and it's Brahman, and so then you're on that platform. So only actually Brahmavadis can then experience Brahmananda. Right? But for the soul, that's only, you know, dealing with a part of their nature. Right? So since you're only dealing with a part, how much Ananda can be there? Right? So it's basically just focusing on Sat, then there's a little bit of Chit, some knowledge. And then, so that means then the Ananda would be less. If you take, you know, you go down like that, it just gets smaller as it goes. But when you add in the person, right, that, then everything becomes full, then it's like, that's the Ananda. So they don't even get the real thing there. So it's, most of these, they're not actually, you can't, what are you going to get from these things? But it's because they can't stand that people give trouble, therefore then Supreme should not be a person. Spiritual should not be personal. So it's not actually an objective view. It's a totally subjective view. So depending on the particular individual, they have their particular subjectivity. Therefore, they have their own measurement of how they judge what's good, what's good and what's bad, what's spiritual and what's material. You know what I'm saying? So that's the...
So everything depends on the intent.
Everything depends on the intent.
And if we don't have the right intent, we are very easily deviated to other motives.
Yes. Because that intent has its natural path. Mm-hmm. Like if you take any of the six, lust, anger, greed, you know, that any of them, they have their natural path. You know, and we see is that any time we take one of these paths and keep going on it, it never ends up good.
Yes.
Right? So it's when we're doing the opposite of this, then we'll say it's good. Mm-hmm. you know, or better, you know, the material platform. Does that make sense? So those who are more idealist, then they'll use the opposite of that, the good qualities, and develop those. While those who are pessimists, they'll take these six and then develop those. Because they'll say you'll start from there, but you'll end up here. Because they were this happy, you know, cute little kid and then grew up to be this not so happy, grumpy, you know, pessimist. And so then they think that that's the path. You know what I'm saying? So you start off with something nice and then they can't, you know, work out. It can't. The family can't work. The money can't work. Nothing can work. Everything falls apart. Everything gets destroyed. And then they're happy with that because then it's like me and I'm great. So, you know, therefore, it's a perfect movie because it's me, you know, like that. You know.
It can be worse.
It could be worse. Yeah, yeah. That, then if you're still maintaining a little bit of philosophical, you know, like that. But then, you know, those ones only work in the, what do you call it? The art house and French movies. I think French is very much on that. So like that. And, you know, that's where art house comes from anyway. So.
Right.
Yes.
And can you say that whether the school is atheistic or atheistic, they're all subjective, except for the four sampradayas, which are...
Objective. They're all subjective, yes, whether they're theistic or atheistic. Because that's why we say they're agnostic, because they're not technically atheistic. They believe that there's a supreme, but they're not necessarily meaning to have any relationship with them. None of the schools are trying to establish a permanent relationship with the supreme. He's just part of the process. Does that make sense? You know, just like, let's say, the government official is part of your process of getting your house. But it's not that because he's a superior position in that, that's something to be, you know, develop their relationship with. No, it's just a way to get my... It means I have to get the papers signed, I have to get this and that. They have to take care of this. You know, so I accept that there's government, I accept that there's ministers, I accept that there's authority, but it doesn't really matter to me because all I want is my house. Mm-hmm. And what I can do in my house with my family and friends, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So that's what all these schools are doing, you know. And so those ones that take it to atheism is actually unnecessary, because to be a gross materialist, you don't have to be an atheist. It's just that you don't really care about. You only include God in where mechanically He needs to be. Right, and the more you understand that, like karma, they get the most of materialism out of any of the schools, right? Because they accept that all these rituals and that are given by the Lord, must be followed, like that. So they get the maximum. But then the problem is that it still won't satisfy the soul. So even if materially everything's going fabulous, what's that got to do with the soul? Said,
yes. Maharaj, an overall question I wanted to ask was that if there is hypothetically a planet and it is colonized by, say, humanoid human beings with the same intelligence, consciousness level, and none of these six philosophies are introduced to them, is it so that in the development of the civilization, after, say, 100, whatever X number of years, they will actually sit and philosophize and come to some kind of conclusion like this?
Like this, these six. So you want to work that into one episode of Star Trek, or are you going to make six episodes to get all the six schools?
He doesn't want to reveal.
Okay, yeah. Otherwise, someone else will pull it out from under him, and then that's all. Yeah. Okay. The producers will get upset if he says too much. Okay. Yeah. So, yes, because it's the modes of nature. The modes of nature apply everywhere. But point is why would you be born on that planet? Because then the modes that are there are going to have a different flavor than those who are born on this planet. Otherwise, why have another planet? You know, unless you're going to get it, unless you're, you know, want to go into other kind of sci-fi kind of stuff with alternative universes and this and that, so you're kind of going beyond the reality of
some secluded area where there is no human contact or a contact of any of these philosophies. So naturally, they will come up.
Yeah, because if you look, then what does it mean? I can't remember. What is it? Science of self-realization.
Yes.
That's where. someone is bringing up all these, what do you call it, philosophies of individuals, you know, how you say, growing up an experience on another planet where they have no contact with these six schools, and what they come up with is just parts of this, of the same six schools, you know, in their own specific mix. And so Prabhupada can answer all of them. Does that make sense? Because the modes are the modes. That's all you're going to get. You're not going to get something different. Does that, make sense? You know, it may be, okay, this dog doesn't slobber so much, and this dog really slobbers a lot. You know? But the point is it's still a dog. So that's not going to change. Does that make sense? So the whole point is that the modes will make it all work. So they're there for a particular consciousness, so whatever's that consciousness, that's what will be done. But it always will fall into these categories. No?
Yes. Yeah. So there is no way in the material, all the universes, to remove once and for all these philosophies. They will always be there.
They'll always, means for materialists, they'll always be there. Otherwise, what do materialists have? If there was only one philosophy, they wouldn't get bored. How will they argue with each other? What else are they going to do? If you're a scholar, then the only point is the position of your ability to argue your philosophy over theirs. That's what makes them a scholar. Right, that's what's unique. Does that make sense? You know, if someone presents a paper, if it's not different from everybody else's, what's the point? So they have to be a Muni, so they have to argue. So if there's not six schools, then how are they going to argue? There's only one school, and everybody understands it very nicely. Then, you know, that's also another sci-fi movie where everyone's exactly the same. That they, there's no difference, and they're all like robots. Like that, but generally those ones don't become very popular. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, it's the Krishna's creation. He's control of the creation. Why would it function different from the creation? Because we have to understand is these six philosophies aren't limited to here. The whole universe uses them. You know, it's not that we have all these philosophies and then the demigods have a different philosophy. So, yeah.
You find that even Srila Vyasaraya, when he compiled Vedanta Sutras, he dealt with the Buddhism and Jainism, which was not existing at that time. That means these philosophies were existing into some degree.
Because the Buddhism and Jainism, they're also eternal principles that are created by Krishna. Mm. It's just that those are for those who don't accept the Vedic authority. See, these six are for those who accept the Vedic authority to the limit as they're willing to accept it. And then when you don't accept it and you still have philosophies, then you end up with Jainism and Buddhism. You know, so you just see is that the impersonal just takes over. So they're always there. So does that make sense? You know, demigod worship is there, and so without knowing about it, then you see, you know, your Greeks and Romans and Vikings, and they all have their system, you know, Egyptians, everybody has, you know. So it's just a matter of what it's going to do. They all have a concept of creation, they all have, you know, so it's just the way it works, yes.
Maybe the nether regions may work better to find a planet like.
Yeah, means that. But then they're not planets, they're talas, so then it won't work, you know, because you have to have a planet, you know. If you just have this upside down mountain with all these things hanging off him, and it raises more questions than his production's going to be able to answer. So if you just have one planet, then they'll stick to the planet. Yeah, and then you could have it where, what do you call it? The atmosphere is helium, so they all talk in high, squeaky voices. So give it something different.
I was meditating on how to nip the evil in the eradicate the root of the problem. Like for the last 1,000 years, all the Vaishnavas have been forced to waste their time on discussing all these mad things.
But that's what the material, that's what preaching is about, is that you spend your time trying to remove these useless understandings. So that's what you're discussing. So that's why there's a difference between the preaching and the cultivating with devotees. It means preaching is what we do, that's the occupation. But as far as the ashram side, then, is cultivating the relationships with devotees and the understanding and the philosophy. So it's a different thing. So you see, many don't catch that. And so it's just all they'll discuss with devotees is just about preaching. They won't discuss how to personally develop, so that, because the stronger you are, then when you go out and preach, the stronger it'll be. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, and you have to have a goal. Therefore, it's about developing love for Krishna. That's why Prabhupada gave the Krishna book and all these things, so you can see where you're going. Right? And Rupa Goswami mentions in the process how to practice that. So we have the Gita and all the preaching. We have the nectar devotion and all the practice. And we have the Krishna book and where we're going. Right? And so that's all nicely explained then in detail within the Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita, how all those three are together in the practice of the devotee. Does that make sense? So that's why you see there's the three features of the Lord. It means these features, but also then of Govinda, Gopinath, Madan Mohan, because they deal with these aspects. Does that make sense? So all those go together. So if we only take, you know, only take one, there's a problem. Right? So if it's just, we only take just the philosophy and all that, it becomes very dry. And if anybody tries to talk anything more than that, then there's the Hajjas and Maya and this and that. Then if they only take the taste and the rasa, then yeah, they take on that sahajya mood, and then they don't like philosophy and this and that. It's not the real thing. But, you know, the Chaitanya Shikshamrita is a whole book. It's just the knowledge that Lord Chaitanya gave. And that's just giving the essence so we can catch it. Right, you know, and then nectar devotion is there, and then it's there. But as you see, as we go into nectar devotion, the details of it, then it's topics that aren't really discussed. You know, 3/4 of the nectar devotion, then it's, you know, means if you just read through it, it's nice. But if you try to study it, then it's another thing. So that means that's part of the process. So that means all these things have to go on. Understanding your relationship, helping others understand. Right, you practicing and then cultivating that in the association of others. Know what the goal is, and then that's your meditation. That's why you're cultivating. That's why you're preaching. So the three go together very nicely if you take them all together. That's what the acharyas give us. So that's why we're very specific about a specific flavor. Otherwise, it switches from that. The balance is out. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point, is that, you know, it's just like, let us say it's a very common thing in especially in baking and things like that. They're making sweets. They'll always put a little bit of salt. In India, you don't have to do that because the butter's already salty, but in the West, it's not, so you have to put some salt. Right? They put some salt. But you can say, oh, there's salt, you know, so what if you put more salt? Is it a sweet? No, now it becomes a savory. So if you're making a pancake, you put more salt, it's not a sweet anymore, it's a savory. But it's not that you can't put sweet on it, because, you know, Gujaratis mix them both, so it still works. You understand? But it's still a different prep. Like that. Does that make sense? It's still called salty. I remember being in one, what are they called? Not a dava. The one with specifically the regional cooking, it's like home cooking, basha. You know basha or basha, a Gujarati basha. No, Lakshmi Narayan's in Calcutta. That's a basha. It's not a restaurant. It's specific local cooking, like you would eat at home.
That you have so many in Jagannath Puri, all these Marwadi basins.
Yes, yes. So specifically that kind of thing. So everybody has them. So it's a regional thing, but it's home cooking. It's not restaurant cooking, which is, you know, fancier. So remember sitting there, and it's a Gujarati place, so it's already the dal sweet and everything's a little sweet. You know, it's just a little sweeter. Remember one guy is there, and he tells the waiter after he tastes it, he says, "Can I have some sugar?" And the guy, without blinking an eye, just goes, gets sugar, and pours a huge amount on his plate. Like, I don't know, like 75 grams of sugar on his plate. And then he takes the chapati, you know, the sabji, the dal, and then touches the sugar, and then eats it. And so, depending on where you are from Gujarat, then you would eat things more sweet. Other places will eat, you know, so it's very different. Does that make sense? The concept, does it make sense? I'm not saying way of eating.
More chili powder.
Yeah, more chili powder, someone like that, or the green chili and all that. That's also there. That's the whole point. That's the how you say wonderfulness of Krishna's pastimes. This, he technically is eternally 16 years old. So therefore, then its effects are still seen. Yeah. So just depending upon what's there, then you have your standards. Just like I used to. Yeah. So we could just keep going on that one, so we won't. Okay. So now, then they say, by this argument, the problem is not solved since the difference still exists, right? Of course there's supposed to be a difference. Something comes from something else, it's not the same, right? From the subtle material cause with subtle shaktis arises a gross effect. Other differences can also be seen. Therefore, the universe cannot arise from Brahman as a material cause because of its difference from Brahman. Scriptures must depend on logic, since the meaning of its topics must be determined through logic sometimes. This doubt is answered in the next sutra. Right, so they'll depend on logic here. But the problem is, since they only have material logic, you can't understand something spiritual. So that's the defect, is they depend more on logic. Right, because we have to remember, Shankhya Yoga, they're still in analytical processes. Right, so we see these first four schools, they're just based on logic. Not that everybody doesn't use logic, but that's all they got. You know? So therefore, since logic is supreme for them, if scripture differs from the logic, they take their logic, not the scriptures. So we see it's not an uncommon thing. Devotees may look at Prabhupada's purports or Bhagavatam verses or Chaitanya, something, and then say, this doesn't make sense. Why are they doing this? So we should, you know, this should be changed. Or that's archaic. Okay, that was like that before, but now it's different. It's the same principle. It's that logic is supreme over Shastra. But we have to make sure Shabda is supreme. Then you use your logic to try to analyze the Shabda. Then, because if you're doing that to please Krishna, then by that devotion, it will be revealed. Right? Otherwise, then you can go on speculating eternally and never get anywhere. Right? So it's just like that. The gross materialist can go on unlimitedly trying to be happy. Unlimited lifetimes, they'll never be happy. The jnani can go on unlimitedly trying to do, he won't be happy. And then the yogi, he can unlimitedly go on, you know, how you say it's in the Brahma Samhita, drilling the breath. And after millions of lifetimes of this, he still can't see the effulgence of the toenails of Krishna, let alone Krishna. That's just the way it is. So when that's understood, then we take Shabda, that this is authority, and if it doesn't make sense to me, then I continue my devotional process and contemplation, and by devotion I'll understand it. But if we're proud and identify with our intelligence, that's where the problem comes. See, we don't have a problem with intelligence and the mechanical process of reasoning and logic. We don't have any problem with that. We have a problem with someone identifies with it. Because if you identify with the body and that's wrong, why have you identified with the intelligence now? That's right? No. All the eight elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, you identify with them, it's wrong. You identify with the senses, it's wrong. The sense objects, it's wrong. So if you identify with any of the 24 elements, there's a problem. We have a problem with that. But using any of these things in Krishna's service, as Shastra gives us, we have no problem. And if you can't understand that, we still use the mechanics that's given to us. And then using it in devotion, then we start to realize what it means. Does that make sense? But if we use any other process, we will never understand it. It's just that's the way it goes. I don't care if you got a PhD, double PhD, like that. I won't go beyond that because I don't think any of our wallets have more than double.
Yes.
Huh? Yes. Yeah. I mean, that's already good, right? Yes. And so that much is still not enough. It still won't get it because it's still working within itself. You have to be able to say, that's the meaning of, you can't understand the forest for the trees. You're just there looking at the tree, you can't understand what's a forest. You know, especially if you're looking at the tree under an ion microscope, you're not going to understand the forest at all, right? Yeah. Okay, so the next sutra then gives deals with this doubt. Drishyate, too. Drishyate is seen, too, but. Difference between cause and effect is seen in the material world also. Right? You can say, but this is there, but now we're taking it. But you're saying is between the spiritual and the material, there's a difference. But within the material cause and effect, we see difference. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakar, with the help of suitable examples delineated in the Shastras, confirms the differentiation between the cause and the effect. Footnote 12. Srila Prabhupada quotes the current sutra, 216. We don't have the number on it.
Yeah, we have it, but it's not because we had the introduction to the sutra.
Oh, I get it. Okay, so this was the introduction so that we would understand, because otherwise it's Drishyate 2.
Yes.
But it is seen. So we need an introduction. That's why the Purana is so much more accessible. Like this, because, you know, you say. Otherwise you have, I think it's, I don't know, it may be others, but the shortest that I know of is the, what do you call it? The Martian Patanjali Sutra. That the whole sutra is one syllable, ak. Yeah. So, you need huge commentaries to explain that. You know, so that's the thing. Is that without the commentaries, you can't understand these things.
Now, actually, it seems that in the sutra, there are quite often the word two.
Two, yeah. But. Yeah. Because you say, that is it. Yes, but. That's what we're saying, is whenever a conversation is, yes, but. You said this, but you know. So you always know it's when two is included, then it's going to.
So it is a Vedanta Sutra style.
Yes. So from that I shouldn't complain, right? Shouldn't complain.
We discussed earlier in the earlier padas that mentioning two or but is basically the etiquette of refuting.
Refuting. Okay. Say but. It's the general etiquette that you say this, but so they know that you are refuting. But that's my point, is that then you understand it's not a question, it's a refutation. So that's the point. The doubt is a refutation. So it's not so much of a doubt as it is a misgiving. So that's what's okay. Srila Prabhupada quotes the current sutra 216 and explains in his purport, the Vedic statements are self-evident. Whatever is stated therein must be accepted. Right? That's just the principle. It's that we've established, we go through the logical process that we're adjusted with to understand the position of the scriptures and why they're always correct. But having done that, then we have to accept that they're always correct. Like Prabhupada says, you test the spiritual master. And then when you're convinced, now what is said, you accept. You can't keep on going and picking and choosing. Does that make sense? Because otherwise it's not responsible. You could say, no, but I always have that right. It's just like you go down to the car dealer and check out their cars, and then you take one of the cars, but now can you just bring it back whenever you like?
No,
now it's yours. You know, you have to work with it. So that's how it goes. It's just the same thing. So once you've accepted that, then so they must be accepted. So if you haven't accepted, then one hasn't actually come to the solid position of bhajana kriya. Mm-hmm. And that lack of not accepting because of the anarthas, that's what makes our devotional service anishta, or not steady. But then when that faith is there in the scriptures, then now it becomes steady, because that's why it's called, that's uttama shraddha when it comes to the scriptures. Right? The Madhyama has Uttama Shraddha. He has faith in the scriptures. So scriptures are always right. Now, I may not understand them. And so I can't make head or tails out of this or be able to use it. But it's not that it's wrong. It's just that I need to, by more service and more association, then I will come to the point of understanding so I can apply it. Right? And so someone who's taken up the process then that's Mandyam Shraddha in the scriptures, because at least they theoretically accept that the scriptures are right, though there may be some doubts here and there, like that. And when one first starts, then that is Kamala Shraddha. They just, you know, just budding Shraddha. You have faith in Krishna and the devotees' process and all that, but not enough to really commit yourself seriously. You understand? So that faith has in the scripture has to develop, you know, along with faith in Krishna. So when that is there, then we see that then we're nicely situated. Then that faith, then that can progress, you know, through, you know, taste, attachment, bhava, to prema. Does that make sense? So that's mature faith. When it's exclusively about Krishna. That's the difference between prema and bhava, is the exclusivity. Bhava is still not exclusive or completely exclusive. Prema is exclusive. It's only about Krishna. Right? That's the only place where we have rati or attraction. So it's just Krishna, and then we see everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. And because it's about Krishna, therefore we can have relationship with everybody. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is this development of this faith is very important. We can't underestimate it. This whole idea of keeping my free will and my independence, that's what will keep you in the material world. That's what got us here, that's what will keep us here. Like that. So it's only when we accept the authority of scriptures, then that's when we can actually progress beyond. And so we have doubts, then we work to remove them. Like that. So that's what the Pariprashna is about. Is asking submissive inquirer to know why, how to move beyond. I have a problem here. I know it's a problem because I don't understand. So not understanding is my problem, not what you said. Right? Not what the scriptures said. Not what, you know, the great personalities did. Is that what somebody says? It's a matter of, I don't understand because of my contamination, so please remove this. And so then whatever the doubt is, you know, like that, then that can be presented, then it can be discussed on a, you know, on a, what do you call it? It's a subjective point that's being discussed on an objective platform. But much of the time when we use, you know, we argue over the secondary aspects, it's subjectivity against subjectivity. So, you know, it's just like you can't cleanse your hands of blood with blood. You can't wash with blood and that makes your hands clean. So in the same way as we can't use material logic and material sentiment and attachment and the secondary aspects to remove that. We may use them as tools, but it has to be connected to the primary. That's the whole thing. When that's done, it works, yes.
So, as far as I understand, this is their fault, or say that they dare to poke their noses in the Vedas and try to use it against the Vedas.
That's there. That's the weakness. But we wouldn't necessarily show it from that angle, though that angle is true. But at the same time, is for the living entity, what would be the alternative, since they're materialists, to not poke their nose in the Vedas?
And yeah, so I was thinking about this.
So that's the whole point, is that we're looking at the other side, is that they're agnostic, they accept the Vedas, they accept the Vedic culture, then that aspect is strong, then everything else is weak, that's what you have to then deal with. So you want to do it in such a way to that they have the right understanding of scriptures rather than throw out the scriptures.
Okay.
See, because that's what we, a weakness, that's the meaning of don't throw out the baby with the bathwater. Is that, you know, the bathwater is dirty, this is nonsense, we throw the whole thing out. You know, it's like, what do you call it? I think it was Hitler. He came and, I don't know, there's something, I think in France he got defeated one time, and then they made him sign a treaty, and then later he came back and defeated the French, and then they had to sign a treaty, and then part of the whole process is the place where he had to sign the treaty, he blew that place up. You know, so that's the extreme of baby bathwater, you know, the bathtub, the room that the bath was done in, you know, like that, you know, take it as far as you want, you know.
That's clean.
Yeah, get the Death Star, destroy the planet, you know, like that, you know, like that. We'll go to the next universe. This one's, you know, wasted. So, it's that we can't, we have to be very, very careful that we're not looking at only the negative. See, the negative is the problem because it's lacking the positive. The problem with night is it's not light. You know? So now if we get rid of the darkness, what do we have? Right? Just a vacuum. Now what do we do? You know what I'm saying? You look funny in a vacuum, right? Like that, everything kind of goes in like that, you know? So it's not good. So you see that's where the weakness is. Now they're making a mess. So the point is dealing with Shastra is not the problem. Dealing badly with Shastra is the problem.
Yeah.
Now if they're really going to deal badly to the point that you have to make an adjustment, that's what we see, that's what Buddhism does. Is the smartest were so attached to their Karmakanda rituals and they were misapplying the Vedas to the point where they had that faith in scripture but they didn't have faith in the proper interpretation of the scripture, only in their own materialistic understanding. So then Krishna had to tell them to give up the Veda, you just follow me. Right? So then it's there. But you see is after 2,500 years or something, then he brought it back. Does that make sense? So 2,000, whatever it is, he let them, you know, stew in their own juices for a while. And then once that was there and they were all peaceful enough, now he brought it back into the Vedic fold. But they're only going to accept the cultural aspect and the Shastra aspect and not the philosophy. So that's why it was Mayavad. Mm. Then, now that they've accepted the scriptures and everything, now you have a position to argue. Now you can establish the Vaishnava position. Mm. So step by step. So like that, over thousands of years, it can be done. And so if it needs to be, Krishna will take care of it. It's not our... So we have to be very, very careful in how we apply that. Because if you do, someone's misapplying it and you remove that whole situation, as long as you're on top of it, that when they are doing it right, you re-add the situation. If you only remove it and then consider job well done, then all you'll do is you've just encouraged atheism. Like that. And atheism is never a solution to anything. Does that make sense? Like that. So it's not that it can't be done, but, you know, God's the one that does that. He can use it because he has the time frame, right? He's got thousands of years. We don't. Yeah, so therefore don't use it. Just establish what's the proper thing to do. Remove what's improper, but you're establishing what's proper, then removing. You know, it's just like you put, you know, don't stand there, stand here. And if they're standing here, they're not standing in the improper place anymore. Rather than don't stand there. Mm. Well, where should I stand? No, just don't stand there. Then they don't know what to do. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.